We're continuing our studies through the story of Ruth, and today we come to chapter 3, and the theme is taking the initiative. And it is all about the strangest marriage proposal in the Bible. I think if you're looking for ways to ask someone to marry you, the strategy that Ruth employed will likely be at the bottom of your list. For here's what we have. A woman asks a man to marry her. A foreigner asks a Jew to marry her. An employee asks her boss to marry her. Finally, it's a younger woman who approaches an older man at midnight on the threshing floor to ask him to marry her. And in each instance, he agrees. And I suppose this story teaches us that God has his ways, and sometimes those ways are very strange indeed. We're going to look at a story of something that happened overnight. It began one evening. The main event was around midnight, and the final scene took place early the next morning. Being harvest time, Boaz would have been at the threshing floor. Now, that's not a barn. It's a flat spot near the top of the hill where the wind could separate the barley from the chaff. And, of course, a good harvest was the happiest time of the year for the farmer, because it meant their hard work was about to pay off. Months earlier, they'd planted the barley and then waited for the rains to come. And as owner of the land, Boaz would have been at the threshing floor to oversee the workers and spend the night there to protect the crop from thieves. Naomi knew exactly where he would be found. And it was she who hatched the plan that she shared with her daughter-in-law, Ruth. They had both experienced Boaz's kindness, and now they wanted to go one step further, but it was risky, to say the least. Wash, put on perfume, get dressed in your best clothes, then go down to the threshing floor, but don't let him know you're there until he's finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, note the place where he is lying, then go and uncover his feet and lie down. He will tell you what to do. Why suggest such a preposterous scheme? The reason was that Boaz, as well as being kind to them, was also a relative related to Elimelech, Naomi's late husband. He may have been a cousin or an uncle or some more distant relative, but it meant under Jewish understanding, he could be a kinsman redeemer. That is, a relative who is able and willing to take on responsibility in a time of great need. And the death of Elimelech, followed by the death of his two sons, made that something that would qualify. The aim was to preserve the family property and maintain the family line. And Naomi knew that Boaz could, if he wished, rescue Ruth, provide a home and a future, maybe even children to secure the family line. Some of the commentators are a bit worried by all this. It seems that Naomi's plan is at least borderline immoral. Well, it was risky for a woman to go to the threshing floor at night, dressed to the nines. It could go wrong in a dozen different ways. There was certainly a risk. But beyond that, there is no evidence that Naomi had bad motives. And there was evidence to suggest that both would behave appropriately. They had met Ruth and Boaz during harvest, and she had impressed him. He knew about her loyal love for Naomi and how he'd left Moab to stay with her. He'd seen her work hard in the field, and her reputation had preceded her. And so he'd welcomed her, told his men not to bother her, invited her to the table, and sent her home with grain. It may even have been that some dim thoughts of romance had already entered Boaz's mind. But what chance was there in the culture of that time for this man to reach out to this young, widowed foreigner working in his field? And so Naomi tried to kickstart the relationship. Was she a matchmaker? Probably. But if Boaz can't propose to Ruth, then Ruth can propose to him. And Ruth is ready for it. She doesn't need a man to tell her what to do. In fact, contrary to the cultural expectations of that patriarchal society, she comes close to telling Boaz what to do. She's, after all, not a gauche teenager, but a woman who had been married for 10 years. No shrinking violet, simpering in the background that somehow God will pour his blessings into her lap. She is willing by faith in that God, with enterprise and energy, to work to bring about God's purpose in her life. And she knew the kind of man she was approaching. He had noticed her, treated her with respect and kindness. Who was not to say that in her heart also there was a little flutter of romance? She also knew that the kind of love the God of Israel practiced and wanted his people to practice was a love that involved commitment and sacrifice. And among all the people she had met in that nation which morally was going downhill, he stood out as someone who shared her convictions and her understanding on that matter. And so she is willing to take matters into her own hands and is ready to let Naomi's wise counsel guide her. And so there was the beauty treatment, a little splash of Chanel number 5 wouldn't go amiss, and that nice little black number you'd look so nice in. And nighttime is more romantic than the daytime, and he'll be relaxed after the day's work. The details about the dress and the perfume and the timing simply set the scene. It was to show to Boaz that this was no spontaneous, ill-thought-through gesture, but something that was planned and serious. And she had been given her marching orders. Go in the evening, wait till he's eaten and drunk, mark where his bed is, go in the darkness, uncover his feet, and then see what happens. And her response is very simple: I will do everything you say. Of course, she's taking a big risk, but she's also believing in a God who is worth trusting. And faith sometimes means taking risks for God and leaving the results to him. And so when the sun went down, Naomi's left at home thinking whether she'd had the most ridiculous plan or whether it was of God, and Ruth set off on her own towards the threshing floor. She was willing to take a step forward, trusting that God would bring her out in the right place. Even if she got it wrong, because her heart was right, she was sure that God could use even that to bring about his purpose. And so we move fast forward to midnight. All's quiet in the threshing floor. Suddenly, a man stirs because his feet are uncovered and they're getting cold. Now, some say uncovering your feet means something more than uncovering your feet. But at the very least, it meant that his toes were getting cold. But it was a dangerous act she was doing. For if he reacted wrongly, she was gambling not only with her dignity, but possibly also her chastity. If he took advantage of the situation, she would have no defense. What were you doing there by yourself, dressed to the nines at midnight? Everyone knew what kind of hanky-panky might go on at harvest time. And watching her and feeling for her, our hearts are in our mouths. But sometimes you see, it's not enough just to wait passively. Sometimes we have to take responsibility and exercise our God-given power of self-determination. That's part of what being human is. And sometimes a courageous, enterprising, even opportunistic initiative is required of us if we're not to forfeit the blessings that God is only too willing to bestow. So Boaz wipes the sleep out of his eyes and he sees a woman lying at his feet. In a whisper, he says, "Who are you?" Naomi had said, "Let him do all the talking." But Ruth, now the adrenaline was pumping, couldn't help herself. "I am your servant, Ruth," she says. "Spread your garment over me, since you are a kinsman redeemer." And that phrase, spread your garment over me, is a straightforward marriage proposal. It could have been translated, take me under your wing, marry me, and bring me under your protection. It's the same word that Boaz used when he prayed that the God of Israel would look after Ruth, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. He knew exactly what Ruth was saying to him. As I have come to God for my spiritual refuge, I'm coming to you now for my personal refuge. You prayed for my blessing, Boaz, since I sought the protective wings of the Lord. Well, you are my dead husband's kinsman. Perhaps you should do more than just pray for me. Isn't it your responsibility under God's covenant law to redeem me from my helplessness as a widow? Can't you see, Boaz, you could be an answer to your own prayer. The protective wings of the Lord are your wings. Spread them over me then, marry me. Well, what an audacious proposal. Boaz had been a lesser man, he might have taken advantage of her. But instead, he shows the greatness of his character, first praying that God will bless her, because this kindness to him is greater than her earlier kindness to Naomi in choosing him over a younger man, which she didn't. And so he agrees to do what she asks because he sees in her a woman of noble character, and he will at least guarantee her security and her future with him or without him. For there is a problem. While he is a kinsman redeemer, he's not the closest kinsman redeemer to Ruth. And there is another man who has a better claim, and he needs to speak to him first. And if he is willing, then he it is who will marry Ruth and ensure her security. But if he's not willing, Boaz is more than ready to step in his place. And finally, he protects her reputation on that night of nights and provides a pledge to Naomi of his serious intent. He makes sure that while she spends the night there under his protection, she leaves before dawn so tongues won't wag and gossip won't spread. And she will go back laden with a grain of perhaps 60 to 90 pounds, 6 measures of barley, which will stand in effect as a dowry should he wish to pursue his claim. And so that scene ends as the dawn begins to rise from the mountains in the east. Oh, if life were straightforward, we'd move straight from the threshing barn to the wedding ceremony. After all, he had promised to marry her if he could. If he could. Those three little words hung in the air. There's this mystery man who Ruth doesn't know, who could yet scupper her plan, and while giving her security, would not be her first desire. What's going to happen? Naomi just says, look, calm down. The man, Boaz, will not rest till this matter is settled today. So sit tight, wait. And that's as hard for Ruth to do as it is for others to take action who prefer simply to sit. The course of true love doesn't run smooth, says Shakespeare. And now they've got a long wait. 1,000 people act who can't wait. And yet we all have to spend a large part of our lives waiting for every green light, it seems to me, as I drive through Edinburgh. Apart from roadworks, there are many more caution lights and red lights. And we all have to wait. In this case, Ruth can do no more. She has to wait for Boaz to take care of the matter. It may be resolved favorably. It may not work out as she hoped. But when we cannot do anything else, faith has to wait on the Lord. And that waiting slows us down, gives us time to think and pray, and teaches us that God is in charge and not us. But God's fingerprints are all over this story. And Naomi's plan and Ruth's daring and Boaz's integrity have all been the threads that he has weaved together to bring the completed picture. But I want us to pause at the end of this today to notice how both faith is both passive and active. It's passive in the sense that sometimes we have to be content to wait for God to act. Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him, says the psalmist. God ultimately organizes the circumstances of our lives. And faith in that respect is the opposite of fretful anxiety. It is patience, commitment, and even resignation. However, it is not complacency, idleness, or negligence. There's all the difference between trusting in God and twiddling your thumbs. And faith also at times requires action and enterprise. For God appoints the means by which we receive his grace, and he expects us to employ those means when we have opportunity. And faith sometimes requires us to take risks, and its audacity is measured and thoughtful. So Ruth had to take the initiative because Boaz was too self-deprecating to consider that Ruth might ever want him. And so in this one chapter, and indeed in the whole story, we learn that our faith in the Lord Jesus will sometimes involve passively waiting and sometimes equally involve active launching out. And some of us are better at one than the other. There is, as followers of Jesus, the patience of faith and the gamble of faith. So do not be paralyzed by morbid fatalism. And do not be driven either by anxious self-reliance. Live like Ruth, a life of patience and enterprise. In other words, live by faith. And there's no life like it. And if you want to see what happens, well, it won't be next week or the week after. 3 weeks' time, we'll see what happens next. Amen.